Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland. On Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
And a good morning to you. Welcome to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. We have another great show for you this morning. I am flying solo in the studio, and it is very early in the morning. Now, folks, the so-called tidal wave that allowed the Republicans to maintain control of the House and take the Senate is mired, in my judgment, in a short-sighted analysis, a dishonest analysis. Of course, there are a bevy of reasons why the Democrats lost the Senate and key races around the country. But what stirs my ire, what has me a little bit feeling a little something-something, is a willful neglect to ignore the rabid divisiveness and the bigotry that undergirds our social construct and today's politics. And we are going to talk about that this morning. Let me just say from the outset that there is a disingenuous argument going on. It's being made about the president and his willingness to reach across the aisle to compromise with Republicans. We know that he has done so. We know that he has bent over backwards over and over and over again. The president has made efforts. He was being respectful. He has been conciliatory. He's been cordial. He's done a Herculean effort trying to compromise with a party who, from the outset, made every effort to undermine his efforts. We know that to be true. From the moment he took office, there was a concerted effort not to work with President Obama. And so for me, the results speak of something far more revealing. Now, the Republicans might say, and you heard Mitch McConnell this week talk about, you know, having a cordial conversation with the president. But underneath all of the mask, underneath all of the showmanship, there is a concerted effort again to undermine the president. I listened to Rush Limbaugh and, of course, other right-wing conservatives this week. It's my job to kind of find out what they're thinking on the right. Their analysis was quite predictable to me, quite fascinating, I might add. First, there is the gloating that is to be expected when folks are winning. But what is interesting to me is the leader of the Republican Party, Rush Limbaugh, I don't care who they say is actually leading the GOP, Rush Limbaugh is the leader of the Republican Party. He was quite succinct and quite honestly, quite honest about where conservatives are politically, socially, and economically. I give him that. I think he's very divisive. I think he's a blowhard. But I do think that he has been quite honest in his analysis of where the Republican Party is today, because he made it clear with this tidal wave that swept all of these folks into office. He made it clear that the Republican Party had a mandate not to work with President Obama. He made that clear. He made it clear that this mandate was not to compromise, not to reach over the aisle and build consensus. He made it clear that the Republicans who swept into office, their job is not to govern. Their job is not to engage their Democratic counterparts, but to, as Rush Limbaugh says, to stop the president. Take a listen to this.
Republicans were not elected to govern. How can you govern with a president that disobeys the Constitution? How can you govern with a president that is demonstrably lawless when he thinks he has to be? The Republican Party was not elected to fix a broken system and make it work. The Republican Party was not elected to compromise. The Republican Party was not elected to sit down and work together with the Democrats. Yesterday's result cannot in any way mean that voters want Republicans to work with Democrats.
What a despicable human being. Despicable. While most of the country is starving for cooperation, this blowhard's only desire is to see a divisive body politic. which in my judgment, family, is undergirded by what I always term selfish individualism, which in my mind exploits vulnerable communities and maintains a wealth divide in this country. Did you hear what not to work with the president? And what is so cynical about Limbaugh and about Hannity and all of these folks is this incessant desire to undermine our democracy. They won't admit it, but that's exactly what they're doing. Undermining our democracy, undermining the social fabric that holds us together as a country. Again, he doesn't want cooperation. He doesn't want compromise. He revels in division in our country. He and his ilk revel in bigotry. Because we've seen it, we've heard it, and the most unfortunate part of his sinister perspective is that low-information voters, those morons, in my judgment, those bigots, wholly embrace his ideological idiocy. And that's what people expect from Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. The ideological idiocy that so pervades our country is what is causing the divisions. It's not President Obama. It's not President Obama who is causing the kind of rancor that we're seeing from those who follow Rush Limbaugh and his ilk. It is a concerted effort to undermine our democracy. You want to hear the difference between Limbaugh and Hannity and their ilk? And a president who is strongly desiring to bring us together as one country, I want you to take a listen to President Obama as he addresses the media and the country just after the 2014 midterm election. Take a listen to this.
I'm committed to making sure that I measure ideas not by whether they are from Democrats or Republicans, but whether they work for the American people. And that's not to say that we won't disagree over some issues that we're passionate about. We will. Congress will pass some bills I cannot sign. I'm pretty sure I'll take some actions that some in Congress will not like. That's natural. That's how our democracy works. But we can surely find ways to work together on issues where there's broad agreement among the American people.
Now, does President Obama sound or act like a man that wants to destroy our country, that wants division? Is there anything sinister in his voice or behavior that he wants to harm the American people in any way? Is there anything in his voice, anything in his character, anything in his behavior that suggests he wants to divide Americans or arouse animosity? No, nothing, not a scintilla, not a modicum. There is nothing measurable in President Obama's character that would suggest that he revels or he's mired in this notion of division in our country. And it's a shame because folks who sit and watch Fox News or read right-wing blogs, you would get the impression that, you know, President Obama is some kind of monster who wants to drive this country into hell. And that's the farthest from the truth. Since he came on the national scene, since the spotlight shined on him back in 2004, all President Obama, then Senator Obama, all that he wanted was a country that wasn't divided. No red states, no blue states, but the United States. Of course, we're going to have differences. But do we allow those differences to have rancor emerge in our hearts and in our minds and in our body politic? We don't need that. And that's all that we're getting from that side of the political aisle. I've been watching interviews of voters and their explanations about their votes. And what is profoundly clear to me and what is so profoundly sad is that many of the folks interviewed cannot articulate any of their candidates' policy prescription or specifics about President Obama beyond right-wing talking points. And if the American people wanted the gridlock in Washington to end, as some political analysts suggest, they would not have handed Republicans a win because these folks are responsible for the obstruction that we've seen in Washington, D.C. So for me, there is something more cynical, something more sinister at work in our politics. And for me, it starts with Koch brother type money. it is fueled by the right wing's incessant hatred of President Obama. It is coupled with a seething bigotry that pervades many quarters of our society. And it really is coddled by an intellectually lazy American electorate that prefers a hypnotic state of amnesia. These folks, we forget about the things that these people have done in Washington, D.C. How quickly have the American people forgotten about the Republican-led government shutdown? The complete waste of resources to appeal the Affordable Care Act. Almost 50 times there was an effort to repeal President Obama's signature legislation to no avail. The Republicans' intentional obstruction, even on policies that they've supported. And even more problematic is this intellectual laziness that many of us have. We forgot about the president's Herculean effort to keep this country from falling over the cliff. I remember when unemployment nationally was hovering between 10 and 11%. And in the black community, we were in almost the mid-teens. I remember when the unemployment rate was hovering in those numbers. And now unemployment is down from nearly 11% to under 6%, actually 5.9%. The stock market, when President Obama took office, it was in the tank when he was sworn into office. And steadily, it started to climb. The stock market today, it is at its highest since the president took office. We've had 56 straight months of job growth in this country. Monthly jobs report has seen vastly improving numbers, with hiring reaching well over the 200,000 range. I remember when President Obama took office, we were losing upward of 750,000 jobs per month for the first 6 months of his presidency. And things began to turn around. In fact, we lost about 5 million private sector jobs. Today, 2014, 9 million jobs added back to the economy. All of this without a scintilla of help from the Republican Party. Now, some folks, some analysts will say, well, these are part-time jobs. I agree. We need to do more, a lot more. But when you are faced with an issue of having to pay your bills and you have a choice between having no income and some income is better than none. And so I applaud the president's efforts to create a climate where job growth can actually occur. 17 months of straight job growth, and we have ignored that. And the president, I agree with some analysts, the Democrats should have done a better job in touting these improvements to our economy. You think about the Affordable Care Act, and you think about before that legislation passed, and you think about where we are now, over 15 million Americans now have health care. These are things the Democrats should have been touting. So I'm amazed here. And what fueled this week's Republican win, in my judgment, was intellectual laziness. Voters beguiled by Koch brother-led political campaigns and an incessant hatred of President Obama. I mean, all of it isn't bad news. I mean, it's good news for Republicans, but it all isn't bad news. Of course, Kay Hagan, she lost in North Carolina. 47% of the vote. Tom Tillis got 48% of the vote. But it's not all bad news. Elisa Chingeri, she will be leading the courthouse staff with 53.79% of the vote. So she won, and we're certainly proud of her. So it's not all bad news. Earn Carmichael, he defeated Chris Haley in the race for Mecklenburg County Sheriff. He won 59.77% of the vote. So it's not all bad news. We're certainly proud of him. So it's not all bad news. But I do want to emphasize that here in North Carolina, we have a conservative governor, Pat McCrory. Our legislature is led by Republicans. And now Tom Tillis will be our next senator, and he has already vowed this week to adhere to his campaign promise to go after the Affordable Care Act, derisively known as Obamacare, despite knowing that it will be a complete waste of time and taxpayer dollars. North Carolina, as is the case with many states around the country, is governed by an ultra-conservative ideology, and the adherents of this self-centered, selfish, individualistic worldview is, in my mind and in my judgment, divisive and poison, and I want to be clear about that. Listen, folks. These people are guided by a philosophical and ideological worldview that is antithetical to most of Americans. They hate government, but want to work within government and receive all the perks and benefits government has to offer. These folks rail against government until their needs require government assistance, especially where corporate benefits and tax loopholes and navigating the special interests of governments around the world, where that is concerned, they love government. They love it. They love it. Their policy prescriptions are geared toward an unrestrained free market and a private industry that is given free rein to ship jobs overseas, to maximize profits, and to undermine the American worker at the American worker's expense. That's what we've seen. That's what this conservative ideology is all about. And these notions are grounded in a belief that if you give every possible break to the rich, that it would somehow trickle down to the poor and the middle class. So people like Tom Tillis and the crop of politicians that rode that wave into office, they articulate a message that castigates government and targets legislation that are designed to lift people out of the doldrums of poverty, lift people out of economic disparity, and give people finally an opportunity to afford health care. That's what they want to get rid of. That's what they are targeting. That's why they target health care. That's why they target education. That's why they target and rail against immigration. It's not merely about deficits, my friends. It's about a worldview. It's in, you know, I talked about this months ago and a couple of years ago when Paul Ryan was running for office. It's an Ayn Rand worldview that they all share. Don't be fooled by it. Now, if you remember, Ayn Rand is that Russian-born philosopher and novelist who promulgated selfish individualism, objectivism, and the notion that religion, faith, and caring for others are virtues that should be roundly rejected. So you got a lot of folks running around here talking about they're Christians, but their actions are antithetical to the Christian message. Remember, she was a staunch atheist that rejected the idea that being your brother's keeper and having a morality that is based on biblical principles are antithetical to her ideas and her philosophy. She touted the idea, which she called objectivism, that pursuing one's own happiness and own self-interest is a proper moral purpose that should not be infringed upon by any religious tenet or government that require concerns for others. She blasted any social policy that interfered with individual rights embodied in a capitalist society. She railed against any social, any emotional, or any faith-oriented obligation to anyone other than oneself. In fact, she once said that you couldn't follow her philosophy and Jesus at the same time. This is the core of conservatism. This is the core of it. This is what they believe. This is what they're tethered to. This is what they're attached to. This is how they feel when they wake up in the morning. This has infringed upon the political spectrums in our country. And this is why the divisions are so stark and so profound and so tangible. Without rattling off,
litany of policy prescriptions Governor Pat McCrory or Tom Tillis or even the North Carolina Republican legislature has for the state of North Carolina or any governor, Republican, conservative governor around the country. Whatever their agenda is, it is safe to say that it follows closely to an Ayn Rand notion of governance. And if you don't believe me, think about this. The recent passage of the nation's most sinister voter ID laws is just an example. And then the Republicans' incessant targeting of the Affordable Care Act. All of this is a harbinger of things that we can expect in the weeks, the months, and years to come, particularly as we approach the 2016 election. And so what is so revealing about the 2014 midterm elections is the cynical nature of politics and our nation's willingness to wholly embrace its despicable past and hold on to a philosophical worldview that is antithetical to the spiritualism most of us proudly carry. And that's the truth. Not only do we see the reemergence of Jim Crow, it's evident, it is acceptable. Folks accept the idea that you can block people from there or employ a poll tax so that folks won't vote. But there is a despicably overt bigotry that has found a home in our politics. It's found a home in media outlets, particularly right-wing media outlets. Our social fabric is poisoned by this stuff. And our governance in many of our states and cities are being led by individuals who hold a worldview that is so sinister. And it's seemingly acceptable. Think about this. You coming off the mic, there's going to be a decision about the police shooting in Ferguson probably in the next couple of weeks. And it has become seemingly acceptable for the police to use excessive force to kill, to brutalize or harass African Americans. It's become socially acceptable to suppress the black and Hispanic vote. It's quite fine with conservative Republicans that corporate behemoths pay low wages, undermine equal pay for women, and fortify a wealth gap that maintains its wide gulf as long as the free market rolls along uninterrupted. And so for me, the 2014 midterm elections and the Republicans' control of both sides of Congress is more than just a 7-year itch or the historical election trends that we have been thinking about. It's about a seething hatred of President Obama. And that hatred of our nation's first African-American president is but one example of the dark and foreboding spirit that is manifest in both the Republican Party and our politics. Hanging President Obama in effigy, disparaging First Lady Michelle Obama, disrespecting the Obama children, disrespecting the integrity of his office by referring to him not as President Obama, but Obama. And many whites in this country are proud to express their vitriol and prejudice towards a man whose dream it is to bridge divides and work toward a more perfect union. I'm closing out, but I do want to say, family, that rigid ideology and bigotry are not easily defeated. History demonstrates that inflamed hatred masked by flowery rhetoric always emerges. The driving force of today's politics is not policy or legislative agendas. It's hatred of President Obama and the Democrats. And the entities leading this hate parade are right-wing blogs and media outlets and the most despicable human beings on television news programs and on radio broadcasts. And while seemingly reasonable arguments are advanced by conservative policymakers sound good, underneath their rhetoric is a cynical ploy to win elections and gain power by playing on the fear and ignorance of people who are mired in hate and self-loathing. The GOP brand, in my mind, is truly tainted. And what this all means is the bigotry and prejudice we thought was relegated to the periphery of our society has once again taken center stage to lead our nation. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. This show is available on our Praise Charlotte website as well as our Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.